Hello?
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 That's major
Hello?
Feedback there.
Yeah. Because I got two phones. Just trying to increase the volume. I can't figure out how to do that.
Yeah, I can barely hear you.
Yeah. Hold on. That doesn't do it.
Can you hear us now, Jill? I can hear you, but it sounds like you're in a tunnel.
Yeah. How about me? Can you hear me?
You're also in a tunnel.
I can hear you loud and clear. I hear both of you actually loud and clear. Let's see.
Art, is that I just hear voices.
Jill,
I can hear Sarah. So awesome.
Jill, is that better?
Yes, that's much better.
What about now?
Still kind of far.
Okay.
I can't even tell who that is. All right, who's on?
Casey.
I couldn't understand that.
Casey.
Christy.
Oh, hi, Christy.
Hi, hi, Ed.
Ken's on.
Hey, Ken.
Hi, Ed.
What are we going to hear on the WebEx today?
You're going to hear me.
It's hard for me to hear Dr. Jones also.
Really?
For me as well.
Really? Right now, is it that hard?
Well, we really have to pay attention.
Well, that's exactly what
I mean, I'm just saying, you know.
All right, I've heard Jennifer and I've heard Sarah Jo.
Hi, Bill Dunty's here.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Not bad.
We may have to use this instead.
Johan is here.
Helen is here.
Can you hear me now, Jill?
Yes.
Is that better?
So much.
Okay. Well, I'm just holding the phone now.
Kathy and Scott are here.
Sarah's here.
Kathy, that reminds me, I was going to send you some pictures.
Oh, okay. I look forward to it.
Is Scott with you, Kathy?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, so Elizabeth, Sal, or Jeff?
Jeff is here, yeah.
Hey, Jeff.
Elizabeth is here.
Tatiana and Peter? Tom or Kathy? John Hannigan? Dan Savage? Dale, are you with Bill?
No, Dale's attending a Echo program, so I think it'll just be me today.
Okay, and Dr. Warren? And Joanne is being represented by someone from her lab who's listening in. Is that correct? Joanne wouldn't say anything, so you can tell me if you're here.
Again, Ed.
Pardon?
It was hard to hear you again.
I can hear you, Ed. It's Michael. How are you?
Good. Yourself?
But thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Or afternoon, as the case may be.
Hello?
Hello.
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 This is Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Tatiana's on.
Hi, Tatiana. I'm just trying all different phone combinations since echoes and things like that.
Kathy Mitchell's on the call, too. Hi, Ed.
Kathy Mitchell?
Hi.
All right, so just John Hannigan and Peter. And that's do it, unless someone else is on the call. All right, well, we can get started. First of all, I hope everybody in the Midwest, Johan, that the weather hasn't been that bad. I look on the news, it's terrible.
No, it hit Houston mostly. We weren't so bad here.
All right, so the thing that I'm trying to get done is that, and Jill sent you an email about this on the 15th of April, in trying to get raised to the next phase of CFAS, one of the things that has to go into the administrative core is an overview of all the projects and what they've accomplished. That includes the cores as well as the UO1s and the developmental projects and any components that might be out there. I'm trying to get a jump start on the admin core. So if people have, I know some people have sent in response to Jill's email looking for what you think are the highlights of your project. I'd really appreciate it and how they interrelate with other consortium projects and any other ideas or future plans that you may have. I think we may have some new information on the timeline for the RFA. Bill, do you have anything that you can add about that?
Nothing on the timeline, but I would say expect in the next day or two that a notice will be published. And then after that notice, we'll be able to more freely discuss the renewal.
So has Dr. Koob signed off on?
Dr. Koob has signed off on a renewal.
Okay.
Ed, I wouldn't make that public until this notice comes out in the next day or so.
Right.
No woohoo!
Everybody just keep quiet about it, but Dr. Koob was just here, so...
Donald Trump just retweeted that to...
Hey, you know, everybody's living in Indiana right now. We're the most important state.
It's all up to you guys, huh?
Well, no, I have no confidence in Mike.
Mike come down to Mexico,
so we're going to have to really start seriously thinking about directions for CFAS and what are the most... the urgent needs that CFAS needs to fill and what we can do to fill those needs. So please keep thinking about where your project's going to go and, you know, if it's better suited for an R01, then think about that. If you think it has to be in a collaborative nature, then think about what you need to do in that collaboration, what resources that you may need. I've been thinking some of this about more technical aspects of trying to reach a broader audience, things like that. So, let's see. Several of us were at the Vancouver meeting, and I thought that went really well. I think that's an area that we should consider in the future. There seems to be a great need, and there seems to be real issues in terms of long-term health consequences, at least to what was presented at that meeting. So that may be something that people want to start thinking about. Like I said, Dr. Koob was here the other day. He gave a very nice talk to both the Center for Behavioral Teratology and then an invited talk in the afternoon. And it was well attended, and I think everyone was very pleased with the outcome. I knew George was famous. I didn't know he's as famous as he really is. But his H factor is 120s on the Web of Science. To give you a comparison, Einstein's was 53. So,
and it's really hard to hear you.
So I'm trying to talk as loud as I am, and I have the phone in my hand. I'm not even on the speaker.
Okay.
That's better.
That's better.
So, and then Dr. Warren was out here, and he and I discussed CFAS and the FASD field, and I think that was profitable as well. And I guess I walked away with the conversation from both of them with the feeling that CFAS would in fact move forward in the future, and hopefully at the same level of funding, but that's still to be decided, I guess. So, but I think people should be encouraged and start really thinking about their application. Again, I think we're well represented in terms of presentations. Michael's presentation is scheduled for Monday at 5:15 at the RSA meeting. So I would encourage everybody to try to attend that. And it's on risk and resiliency. And then Bill Barnett, I believe, is going to be speaking at the FASD study group on the data sharing plans that we have and the tools that can be used. I think it's really important that we start making sure that we abide by the CFAS rules and regulations about getting data in there. And Michael, are you presenting Kathy's work at the study group?
I wasn't asked to.
Michael and I have both, we both kind of talked to Kathy about it, and currently I have 5 minutes on the schedule for one of us to do that introduction to the stamp out stigma.
Yeah.
It's in the afternoon, and it's about a, it's right before the coffee break in the afternoon is what we have, so we can,
okay.
We can talk about how we want to do that.
Are you thinking of doing that then?
I can do it, or Michael can do it, either one of us.
I'll let you two decide on the best way to get that out there, but I think it's important.
Bill Barnett. Do you know how large the audience is for that? I'd like to think about bringing some handouts.
A couple hundred.
Okay.
It'll be about probably not more than 180.
Okay. All right. I'll have to think carefully about what kinds of documents to try to promote follow-up. Okay, thank you.
And Bill, you're
if anybody has any questions or needs to contact me, if I can be of any help, let me know. This is Kathy, of course.
Yeah, Kathy, it's too bad you're not going to be there to do it.
I know. I would have loved to have been.
Kathy, it's Michael. And if you could send Jess and me the sort of final version of the language examples, that would be helpful. I know we made some suggestions, but I want to be sure that we present what is considered final.
Okay, that's perfect. I also have a few slides that break down some of the comments that came in from the Washington Post article, which are kind of, you know, kind of helpful. They kind of help to once you see the numbers and how people think, it just kind of speaks to the issue.
So just send us whatever you think would make this a better presentation, and Jeff and I will sort it out.
Great. Perfect.
Okay. Everybody has submitted their progress reports, and if you could download the final PDF from Commons and email Jill a copy of that, that would be greatly appreciated.
Hey, Ed?
Yeah.
I just wanted to make a plug also for two symposia that members of CFAS or former members are going to be participating in. There's one on Tuesday afternoon on epigenetics. Feng Zhao, I, and Dale are putting that one on. Rajesh is participating as well as John Hannigan. And there's a DOAD session that Joanne Weinberg and I are doing Wednesday morning. Hopefully everyone will still be around for that one.
So there are reasons to stay for the entire meeting then.
Yeah, And the discussant for that session is fabulous. That would be you if you didn't remember.
No, I don't.
Yeah, so you have to stay around till Wednesday.
Oh, okay. So many things to do, so little time to do it. All right, so send your PDFs to Jill. Remember to stay for the whole meeting, and I forgot about Tuesdays. I have that in my notes and symposium. I'd forgotten about Joanne, but thanks for bringing that in. Bill, you also wanted to bring up another topic, so is now a reasonable place to do that?
Yeah, sure. So Dale and I wanted to make everyone aware of a funding opportunity announcement that was reissued, NIAAA is participating in, called The Discovery of the Genetic Basis for Childhood Cancers and Structural Birth Defects, Gabriella Miller Kids First Pediatric Research Program. It's kind of a mouthful, but it basically what it comes down to, it's a common fund initiative that is looking for applications to use whole genome sequencing to look at genetic etiology behind structural birth defects. So we've reached out to some of the investigators in the field who have cohorts and may have biological samples, but and we've also asked the FASD study group to send out an announcement. So I'd be happy, or Dale would also be happy, to discuss the funding opportunity announcement. Basically, it's soliciting biological samples or DNA to be sequenced, whole genome sequenced, and then that data will eventually make its way into a data resource that's being developed. And so this is, it's a 10-year initiative that the NIH Common Fund is managing and has been mandated by Congress. So if we think there are cohorts or populations out there that we could have sequenced, I would encourage investigators to look at the funding opportunity announcement, which I think Jill was going to send around.
I got a copy yesterday. I'm not sure where I got it from.
It might have been from the FASD study group.
I think Jill just sent a connection to it.
And, I mean, Tatiana, you can maybe speak to the possibilities with what we have going on. And Ken, you know, they're certainly doing a lot of children's Grady's with the Aetna Institute, is it? Or?
Right, the Institute for Genomic Medicine, yeah.
So something that may be a real possibility for us,
mm-hmm.
someone in this group to consider.
Yep.
All right. Remember, if you have any news or items or updates, to email Jennifer about those so we can get them up on the website. Keeping that current is going to be important over the next couple months so that we can refer people to it. And we look like we're doing something now rather than 6 months ago. So anything, any news, papers, whatever, send them to Jennifer. The one big problem that we're having now is that very few people are utilizing the CFAS publication policy steps for CFAS publication. So we get these concept proposals, and we never know what happens to them. And sometimes we don't even get the concept proposal, and then we all of a sudden someone says, hey, here's a paper. What should I be doing about the authorship on this paper to me? So this system's not going to work unless these they're followed up on. And I know Dale and Bill are both interested in this, and we're putting together a list right now of the concept proposals we have received and the manuscripts and the papers that have come out of these and where they are. And if you look at it, you get a lot more concepts than you ever get with a final project product. So I would appreciate it if everyone would attend to that. You put in a concept proposal, let us know what's happened with it through the manuscript submission form and the post-acceptance form that we have available. And anything else you can add to that, Jennifer or Jill?
Hey, it's Jill. So when I put the Excel together, I noticed that it was hard for me sometimes to tell. I mean, a concept proposal could have several papers come out of it, and it's hard for me to tie them. So I instituted a numbered system. And when you go to the viewing concept proposals document that you all can view in Google Drive, you can see the numbers. So if you can just keep referencing that number through the stages, that would be helpful. And if you have any modifications you need to the numbers, since we just instituted the numbers yesterday, just let me know how to modify the Excel, and then I'll know that moving forward. But just to remind everyone, you have an idea, you write the concept proposal, it's made public to everyone, anyone can comment on it. That's supposed to be the, hey, let people know you want to be involved in this stage. The author should be checking it to make sure they're getting everyone involved. Then you write the paper, you submit the manuscript submission, you let me know about that, you make sure you're following NIH policy steps, and then you do the post-acceptance, and that document, NIAAA and NOFAS have access to, and they can look at it and see what's been published and how and if they should get it out into the public. So.
And we're going to be sending NIAAA updates on this on a regular basis, the same way we do with recruitment in the Google Graph. So it would be in your best interest to make sure you are current.
Ed, it's Michael. I think it would be helpful if Jill could just circulate the process and some links, just so everybody has that readily.
Yeah, they're attached to every conference call email I send out. They're right there.
There's also a flow chart, I think, online, and we can resend that as well.
Yeah, it's just a reminder.
Okay. All right, before we get too short on time.
By the way, Ed, John, this is John. I came in late. Sorry.
Hey, John. Checked off here. All righty. Dr. Jones, are you prepared to take over the screen and share everything?
I think I am, Ed.
Hey, Ed,
I never know, but I've got Deanna sitting right next to me here, so she will help me if I screw it up.
Okay.
Ed, are we ready?
Know that Dale has joined.
Oh, and Dale is here, too. How was your echo meeting?
Still echoing in my head.
I can imagine. Okay.
All right, so I don't know, does everybody have the slides on their screen?
No.
No.
Okay. Jill, can you take care of that, or is that something that I somehow have to do?
You do it, and you go to the Quick Start tab on the screen, and you hit Share My Screen.
Okay, let me, did you hear that, Deanna? Sure. Okay. What do you hit?
On the Quick Start tab of the
Cisco
WebEx Center meeting, which if you can't see it, just go down to your applications and look for the one that's half blue and half green. It's like a circle. Click on that.
Is that it? Oh, maybe.
That's why I wanted to start this early, Ken.
He's got it. We practiced.
There it is. Okay. All right.
You can see it now?
Well,
yeah.
I can see your screen, but it's...
Okay.
I have all the icons all over it, too.
How is that?
Can you get rid of... Can you... Expand that, the slideshow?
Oh, yeah. I just expanded it. Can you see the, is it, should be just the
no,
PowerPoint at this point.
Put it in presentation mode.
Okay. Yeah, it's already in presentation mode. Okay, so now you can see. Can you see it now?
Yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, perfect. All right. I'm handing it over now.
Thanks, Deanna. So if you could just ignore this slide for just a moment, because I want to talk about a few other things. First of all, Just to give you an, I'm assuming that I'm supposed to tell you what I've done in the last 2 months in addition to what I've got on the screen here. So basically we've had two, or I've had two clinics at San Diego State in the last 2 months, and I'm going to have a clinic in Minneapolis next week to see kids up there. And I know full well that I have to schedule an appointment with Julie and Claire sometime in the next few months as well, because I think they've got patients that are lining up there. So that's the major focus of what I spend my time doing. I mentioned at Austin, Texas, that I had 7 or 8 videos that I have of children with the fetal alcohol syndrome who I am in the video doing a physical exam on, and I also mentioned that I was going to send these out, stream them to the San Diego chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, and that has been done. We've gotten 27, we sent out 500 of these, which represents all of the pediatricians in San Diego County. And we've gotten back at this point 27 responses to those, which is a little bit disappointing from my perspective. It's been out for about a month now. But I have found in talking to some of the pediatricians that when they get something from the San Diego chapter of the AAP, they hit the delete button almost automatically. So it may be that somehow I'm going to have to flag these things to make people understand that this is such an important thing. So let me just tell you about these, what we got back. We basically asked them 5 or 6 questions. The first was, before watching the video, please rate how confident you currently feel about diagnosing FAS. And there was one, I think, who was very confident, and the rest were moderately to low, I would say 50-50. The second question, after watching this video, please rate how confident you now feel in diagnosing FAS. And everybody had come up, so we had a number of extremely confident at this point, and a lot of moderately and very confident, and no low confidence. In what area do you feel most unsure about diagnosing FAS? And that's an open-ended thing, and I had 3 or 4 responses to that. Do you feel this video training method is an effective way to demonstrate how to evaluate a patient for FAS? And I got 27 yeses. I then asked some more open-ended questions, and finally, do you feel a video model demonstrating the neurobehavioral effects of prenatal alcohol exposure would be beneficial? And I got all 27 people responded with a yes. So I think that the response to this thing was really, if you forget about the numbers, I think it was quite good. I would also mention that at this point, the National American Academy of Pediatrics, I've talked to them about this, and they are very interested in distributing this to all members in the United States, which I obviously think is a very positive thing, and I hope NIAAA feels that way as well. I will be communicating, obviously, with them, Ken, to see if that's something that NIAAA feels would be an appropriate thing to do. I just wanted to mention the telemedicine issue. I'm going to Minneapolis in 2 weeks to give a talk, actually 2 talks, one of which is focused on clinics from around the state, and I'm going to talk about telemedicine at that, and I'm also going to New Mexico in 3 weeks. Dan Savage has invited me out, and one thing that we are going to talk about to his group is telemedicine. So let me talk now for about 5 minutes about what's on these slides. And this I've got to tell you. Yes?
Can I ask a question? Did you ask the pediatricians if they think they have anyone in their practice that has an FASD?
I did not, Ed. Would be an interesting question to ask. I told you the story of the pediatrician who I talked to about 3 months ago, one of the board of directors of the local chapter, and I talked about FAS for about 15 minutes, and he came up to me afterwards. Now, this was not somebody that had just finished their residency very recently, but he said to me, you know, Ken, I've never seen a child with FAS. And I looked at him for about 10 seconds, and I said, oh, yes, you have. You just haven't recognized it, because our data suggests that 2 to 3% of kids in the first grade classes in the San Diego Unified School have an FASD. So I feel sure that the pediatricians are seeing this, but I'm not so sure that they recognize they're seeing this. Does that answer your question, sort of?
Yeah. When they had the National Task Force on FAS, we had a pediatrician on the task force who said he's never seen one in his practice.
Right.
I don't think that's an uncommon response.
No,
and I, think
no I don't either.
Don't know what they're looking for.
And you know, it's really amazing. The American Academy of Pediatrics has what they call a toolbox on FAS, which is really pretty darn good. And most pediatricians that I talk to claim that they don't even know that that toolbox exists. So it's really disappointing. And it gets to this stigma issue, I think, quite dramatically, because it is very clear that the group of people that have, at least in the medical profession, the group of people that have the most stigma are primary care pediatricians and primary care obstetricians. So they're clearly a group that needs to be focused on about this, because by demonstrating this stigma, they don't diagnose this disorder and they don't recognize this disorder, and they therefore don't get these kids into services and support groups, and they don't talk to the mother after making the diagnosis and explaining to her that this baby is having his or her problems by virtue of the drinking alcohol during pregnancy. And so she goes on and without recognition and without any knowledge that alcohol causes a problem, and has another child with a fetal alcohol syndrome. So it's clearly a significant problem, and we need to do something desperately about primary care pediatricians and obstetricians, and also family practitioners, obviously. So we have proposed, and this is the first slide, and if somebody wants to interrupt me, please yell, because I'm
Ken,
happy
Ken
to
Ken, Sarah,
yeah.
can I interrupt you? Just to echo that, you'll remember that we ran into the same thing with the paper that we submitted to the Journal of Pediatrics, having
Absolutely.
To really explicitly say, you have this information in the toolbox, toolbox related to fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, and you know the reviewers really needed to be educated. I mean, that's only 2 or 3 people, but
yeah.
clearly they didn't know about that, and we needed
Absolutely.
To educate them about the fact that they already had the tools that we were saying they needed to use, and they said, well, we can't do that because we don't have these tools.
Right.
So.
No, it's amazing. Thanks for bringing that up. It's,
yep.
It's amazing, really amazing. So this is a proposal that we are submitting to the CDC now as part of another grant that I have with the CDC to educate pediatricians about FASD, and this is sort of a tag on, which is a year and a half, 2 year project that we are, and I've talked to them about this, that we are proposing as a pilot project that we are very hopeful that we can also, we hope to be able to apply to the, for CIFASD funding as far as this is concerned, but to expand what I'm going to tell you about today. And I know I've talked to you about this too, Ed. We're calling this anti-stigma program for primary care pediatricians and obstetricians, and basically there will be 3 groups involved in this. Number one is the NOFAS and the Circle of Hope, and Kathy Mitchell, who everybody knows, will be leading that, and Peggy Coombs Way will be working with her on that. Peggy Coombs Way is a biologic mother here in San Diego who is, I know, a good friend of Kathy's, and is not as good a speaker as Kathy, because no one could be, but Peggy is excellent and has given many talks for us here in San Diego County. Our second collaborator is the Institute of Psychology at the Illinois Institute of Technology, and that's a guy named Pat Corrigan, who's a social psychologist. And you may remember in Austin I was talking about a guy by the name of Bruce Link that I had gotten, who was very much into stigma, and it became clear that Bruce was not going to work out as far as this is concerned, because Bruce's primary issue is identifying stigma in a population. And as we explained to him that we already knew that people stigmatized biologic mothers who drank alcohol during pregnancy, and that they also severely stigmatized children with FASD. And he said, well, I can't, and that we wanted to do something about it. We didn't want to identify it. And he said, well, that's not my thing, so you need to call a friend of mine named Pat Corrigan. And this guy's thing is dealing with stigma and trying to come up with strategies to deal with it. And Kathy and I met with Pat just last week, and I think had a spectacular time with him, and he gave a half-hour talk that was spectacular as well. And we have been talking to him once a week on over the telephone for the last about 4 or 5 weeks. So that's the second group. And the third group is our group at UCSD. And you know, Tina and I, Diana Sims, runs our Institute for Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder Discovery. So she is very involved in this project too. I just want to say a word about the evolution of the fetal alcohol syndrome, because I think it's a fascinating thing. And you'll all recognize on the top here that for the first 20 years after 1973, we all rigorously delineated this recognizable pattern of malformation and the neurobehavioral deficits. And this was primarily a medical problem that people had. And then the year 2000, Armstrong and Abel published a paper suggesting that the fetal alcohol syndrome was a social problem, and I certainly agree with that. But they went further in this paper to suggest that the recognition of society to this disorder had risen to the point of a moral panic, which of course is an alleged breakdown in public morality, a heightened level of public concern, and a distortion of ideology. And I thought that was ridiculous, that Armstrong and Abel would suggest that this had gotten to the point of moral panic. I thought it definitely was a social problem, but a moral panic seemed like it was a stretch from my perspective. So I've changed my mind as far as that's concerned. I think without any question this is a moral panic that people are in. And I think that there's no more graphic representation of that than what happened to Kathy on January 18th of 2016 when she was interviewed for the Washington Post. And I think most of you are aware of the fact that that the Washington Post got more responses to that article than they had ever had. And she got huge numbers of emails, and about 50% of them were just horrible to her, and just incredibly stigmatizing and really demonized her as the biologic mother of a child with this disorder. So I have no question that we've got ourselves a moral panic going on here. So the primary objectives of our goal of our project is to decrease primary care pediatrician stereotypes about women who drink alcohol during pregnancy, to decrease the percentage of primary care pediatricians who report stigma bias as a barrier to screening their patients, and the same with obstetricians, to decrease primary care obstetrician stereotypes about women who drink alcohol during their pregnancy. Just from the standpoint of pediatricians, and I've already sort of mentioned it, most people would think that a pediatrician would have minimal, if that, influence on the pregnancies of women, and that's clearly true as far as first-time mothers is concerned. But for women, as it relates to their second, third, fourth, and fifth pregnancy, the pediatrician can have a major role in advising her of the risks of drinking alcohol during that subsequent pregnancy, probably more than the obstetrician, because the pediatrician is seeing that woman's previous children on a very, very, very regular basis, and is in a great position to counsel her. Secondly, a mother's awareness that her child has been affected by prenatal alcohol exposure provides an opportunity for her to get into counseling to prevent a subsequent alcohol-exposed pregnancy. And finally, often it can be a life-changing moment for that woman, providing her with accurate information and supports and strength and motivation to address the issues. So this is the reasons that pediatricians do not screen for alcohol-exposed pregnancies and FASD, and there probably are more, but the thing that you think about the most is insufficient information, and that's clearly true. Most pediatricians have not a clue about this disorder, as we all just talked about, and the same is true with obstetricians. And so I know that Pat Corrigan thinks that insufficient information is not the major reason. He strongly believes that stigma, stereotypic views about mothers who might be exposing their unborn babies to alcohol leading to prejudice and discrimination. So the two approaches to changing stigma that we are going to use, and which I assure you Pat is the person who is the brains behind this operation, and Kathy and I are sort of tagging along but providing the information and the mothers and that kind of thing. So providing education is number one, and we need to provide education without any question. But Pat assures us that as it relates to stigma, education is not very good. And he believes in this approach that he calls contact interventions. So they're used to challenge stereotypes by providing presentations of live experience of a health condition by high-functioning persons with the health condition, followed by interactions with the targeted audience. And so we propose to develop alcohol-exposed pregnancy, FASD, anti-stigma education, and contact program. I would just mention that Pat, who is the editor of a journal called Stigma, which I doubt if any of us have ever heard of, I certainly have never heard of it, and is really one of the leaders as far as this is concerned, has spent most of his time dealing with stigma as it comes to mental illness. And there's a lot of work that has gone on as far as that's concerned, and he assures me that has never been anything written about or anybody in this field thinking about stigma as it relates to FASDs. So as far as using these contact interventions, we'll develop a training program for birth mothers, those with lived experiences, to talk with the participating primary care pediatricians and obstetricians to demystify the alcohol screening process from their unique perspective. And so let me just go on here. So the contact intervention for overcoming stigma is sort of diagrammed here. Two mothers with lived experiences, and these would be biologic mothers, and they're the two that hopefully I mentioned, Peggy and Kathy, and they will then sit down with groups of academic primary care pediatricians, primary care pediatricians from the community, academic obstetricians, and community-based obstetricians. And we think it's important to have both academic pediatricians and obstetricians and community-based obstetricians and academic obstetricians, because we think that they respond quite differently to issues such as this. So that's the approach. However, we are hoping to then take it from pediatricians and obstetricians and look at other issues as well, because stigma is obviously a universal problem. Obstetricians and pediatricians obviously stigmatize both the biologic and adoptive parents and the affected child. Particularly adoptive parents frequently stigmatizes their own child. The public obviously stigmatizes the parents as well as the affected child. The educators obviously stigmatize both, and other children stigmatize the child with FASD. So we would like to be able, in the next iteration of CFAS, to be able to propose an anti-stigma program such as this, and we hope very much to be able to get this funding from CDC to sort of run a pilot project of this, looking specifically at primary care pediatricians and obstetricians. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Any questions?
Ken, this is Dan. Is there any reason, do you think a different kind of program would have to be developed for nursing or primary, or I'm thinking physician assistants and other kinds of providers that may more frequently see these women and their children than even pediatricians do?
Yes, to answer that, any question. I don't think it needs to be a different program. I think this lived experience. I've talked to Pat a huge amount about this approach, and it sounds really good. But without any question, I think you're absolutely right. The nurses, definitely. Social workers, definitely. Anybody who is dealing with children who have this disorder and their moms need to be educated about this, and the degree of stigma they have has to be stamped out. So thank you for bringing that up. Kathy, do you want to make any comments?
No. I think that having the real experience there can turn people around, so they can come in believing one way, but once they really understand how it all occurs and kind of take a pause to step inside the shoes of what it might be like to be a mother who drank during pregnancy, I think it just turns people around and reduces stigma.
Thanks.
What will your outcome variables be?
In other words, how are you going to demonstrate whether this
is
effective?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pat has that all figured out. I asked him that on the afternoon of when we saw him. And Kathy, can you remember what he said? He's got a methodology to do that he's used with mental health. And I'm
mental
sorry,
health?
I can't remember it.
Okay.
It's a great, obviously it's the biggest question.
No, I do not, Ken. I don't remember what he said.
Okay.
It's a great, big question.
Yeah, it's huge. He says that he's completely on top of that, so we'll see.
So
I always trust people.
Yeah, I do too.
All right, you mentioned the two parents, Kathy and Peggy.
Yes.
Are more parents going to be included? I'm thinking of the unique situation in that both of the had children when not very much of anything was known about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders.
Right.
And I'm wondering if there are different issues that would come up with a parent who was aware of the fact but couldn't get into treatment, was never asked about it, was never told about it. Even though people knew about it.
Yeah. Obviously, we would like to use Kathy and Peggy around the clock, never stop. But that's obviously not going to happen. And the second thing, obviously, is that at this point, for at least the program that we are suggesting, that it's going to be all done in San Diego County. We have about... I think 6 biologic mothers that we are very much involved with here, and we haven't brought this up to them, but we are planning on talking to them, and they are a lot younger, they're in their 20s. So I think that's a really good point, Ed, and obviously. I've got here the collaborators are with NOFOS and specifically the Circle of Hope, because I know from talking to Kathy that she's not the only woman in the Circle of Hope that can talk about this and who is willing to talk about this. So I think that if we could, obviously we would like this to be a nation and across the country type thing, and that can't be all Kathy and Peggy. So we would like to be able to get a lot more biologic mothers involved in this. Pat's real desire was to have a physician who was a biologic mother who had a child with the fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And there is one physician who is a biologic mother who was at this meeting we were at last week, and we haven't approached her as far as this is concerned. You haven't approached her, have you, Kat? Yeah, I know you've approached her about talking at other places. You haven't talked to her.
Yeah. Well, just to be clear, through the Circle of Hope, I mean, we have women in, you know, that come from all over the world in every state, you know, all different backgrounds, different stories. And when we had the SAMHSA money, we had a speakers bureau, and I have trained 25 women that all received a follow-up training like a year later. So we do have women that are trained, but again, like Ken was saying, I don't think they'll be part of this particular project because it'll be focused in San Diego. Yes, Mary is involved in the Circle of Hope, but you'll have to, because of the stigma and many of the issues, there are some women that, you know, are not comfortable about this and maybe in a point in their life where they don't want to, or their kids have gotten older and the children don't want them speaking about it. So a lot of issues that go on that we have. Oh?
Somebody's got some.
Somebody put us on mute.
Dance music.
Can you hear me?
I unfortunately can't mute thing anymore on the new platform.
Okay, can you hear me, Kat?
That was fun.
Oh. Yeah, well,
right.
Bill and I were dancing.
Yeah, I know. It's just sitting here at the computer. Get up and dance.
Yeah, so several months ago when CDC, I guess, was releasing some of their findings, they had a webinar that maybe many of you tuned into. I know Bill and I did. And
yeah,
one
I was
of the
on it.
Two or three speakers was a woman who was a physician but was also a birth mother, and she was horribly treated by a lot of people being in those positions, but she could well be the Mary you're talking about. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's Mary DeJoseph, and, you know, she's fantastic. I will just tell you, because I happen to know this, a couple of her children are not crazy about her speaking. So I think she's pretty particular in the, you know, type of formats that she would speak. But speaking to physicians would be something I think that she would, you know, feel comfortable with. But again, that, you know, and we had a PhD that was featured in one of our newsletters who had a child. Right now, her child is on target. She had been drinking, and we got her into treatment. And you know, so we have a lawyer, we have lots of different folks that can speak on the issue, but having a physician is great. Oh, one thing, let me just add this, because I have been on the search for the moderate drinker, and, you know, it's one of the questions that, you know, especially after the CDC vital signs came out, with all the focus on moderate alcohol exposure, and certainly in animal models and in research, you know, I know that there's been measurable effects. I guess one of the things we see in human populations is that either moderate alcohol users, you know, their children never get a diagnosis of an FASD. They get more of a mental health or you know, learning disability type diagnosis, but we don't really have any women that would be considered moderate alcohol users, and I don't even have any that I can pull from, like when the media, of course, they always want the moderate alcohol user with a child with an FASD. So I have put that out there. I actually just recently had a journalist approach me again. And I don't know her, but if any of you do, I would appreciate, you know, if you could let me know who she is.
Ken, this is John. I just wanted to add a point that I know that the American Academy of Pediatrics is in the middle of a process for generating a pediatric practice change for screening for prenatal alcohol exposure. They're generating an implementation guide, and I'm sitting on a panel that's working on that, and have in one meeting, I did bring up the stigma issue, and they're aware of it, but I'm not sure they've yet bought into that they need to address it.
They have, John.
Okay.
In fact, it's one of the three major issues that the AAP is, I'm also on that program, and that's what we are proposing this for, basically through the AAP, as part of the CDC.
Okay.
So yeah, thanks for bringing it up, John.
Any other questions for Ken or Kathy? Okay. All right, thank you very much, Ken.
Thank you, Ed.
I basically have gone through our agenda now. Are there any project updates that people want to provide us with? I can just go down and call on people if there's any, or someone could volunteer, or why I find my roll call. There we go. All right, so... Jennifer, do you have any comments about things that you need for the website or anything like that?
Well, I think, again, if everybody just uses that post-publication form, that I want to emphasize, again, is really critical because that's also where Kathy and Tom can get information. But any other news items, please forward them to me. Any awards, anything else that you think is noteworthy, then we can highlight that on the website.
All right, I think Dr. Jones gave us an update. Kathy Scott?
I don't think so.
No. Elizabeth? Jeff?
Elizabeth
yeah.
Still on. No updates yet about papers. We have several that are close to this point of sending out. One of them that I'm working on is about 95% done.
All right. Well, again, I mean, that brings up the point for the renewal. It'd be great to get papers out ahead of that. So I encourage everybody to try to spend a little extra time and get some stuff out. Sarah?
We have one paper that was submitted, and we were asked for some minor modifications, which we're working on. That's at the Journal of Pediatrics, so we're very hopeful. We have another paper that we submitted to ACER at the beginning of April, and we haven't heard anything yet. We have two other papers that are very close to being circulated, and then a couple others that are in the process of being edited.
Tatiana or Peter?
This is Peter. We have a paper on the fetal face project that we reported in Austin that's ready to be submitted, and we're just waiting for PASS to give their blessing on it before we submit it.
Okay. Johan?
We have three reviews. Two have been accepted, one that needs a little minor revision, and then three research articles that the development proposal helped contribute to. We're also waiting. I have a score on an R21, a priority score of 20, so we'll see in just under 2 months if that one's funded.
Okay. Good luck with that. And Kirsty?
We are just scaling away and also preparing an R01 for the June submission deadline on a third time point after discussion with you in March.
Okay. Kathy? Any additions?
No.
Okay. Then the Science Advisory Board have any comments? John?
Nope.
None from me.
Sarah Jo?
Looking forward to Ken's visit in a few weeks.
Nope.
Dan had none. NIAAA?
I would just add to the paper discussion that probably a key time to be writing them, and I would emphasize papers that are collaborative, that show the interacting parts, creating things that wouldn't have happened in a less collaborative environment.
And Helen, I apologize for not calling on you sooner. Do you have anything on the informatics score?
Yes, I can. I can say that we almost done creating the phase two part for the external researchers. We just had a meeting with Sarah and Tina and Elizabeth before this meeting, and we discussed appropriate data sets that we would provide. So I think we will be able to do it by next meeting.
All right. Unless there's any other comments, thank you all for participating today. Thanks, Ken, for the WebEx. And I hope you all have a good rest of the week. Any other issues? All right. Thanks, about the renewal. Take care and have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.